What's up, bro?
What's up, man?
How we doing?
Feeling this music again. It's been a little while.
It has, man. It has.
I was talking to JT this weekend, man.
JT with Long Cut.
He was talking about some investments and he was talking about real estate, man. It was getting me all sorts of happy.
Hell yeah,
I said,
man.
Yeah, man, I'll sell you all kinds of shit. And he goes, no, I want to invest in some stuff. And we had a good conversation just about investment properties and some other good stuff. But if you guys have not heard them, good friends of ours, awesome dudes, Long Cut.
Welcome, guys. Listening to the Day One Dollar Zero podcast.
If you have not subscribed to iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere else you can find us, please do. Throw us a comment. Throw us a question. Like it if you like it. Same thing on our Facebook page. If you like it, throw us a like.
I like how you say that. Like it if you like it.
Well, the integrity behind it. Like it if you like it. People send us, I'm not sure about you, but for me, like, I get a lot of invites to like certain pages. Mm-hmm. And I like it if I like it.
That's good.
I don't know, man.
That's
like, good. I definitely entertain the invites and go and take a look and just something that's interesting or intriguing or feel, or even if it's not, if it's just like a fellow realtor, but I feel like they're doing a good job on their page and it looks great. Like, yeah, cool, man. I like that. You ever get those friend requests just so they can send you something?
Dude, you know it immediately. My first thing I do is go and I look at what the fuck they do. If they've got anything to do with real estate, inspector, photographer, whatever.
It's so hard.
I'd put money on it, dude, that
you
I'm going to accept
like
it.
Them. You want to like, you want to accept the friend request and you want to like their page and support.
I don't want to.
But then you get those messages, right?
Always, man. Always.
They're almost as bad as like multi-level marketers.
Almost. Not nearly as bad.
And it's funny that we're talking about that right this second, because today we're going to talk about if entrepreneurship is for you or not.
The hustle, man.
And we're talking about true entrepreneurship. And we're going to talk to what we can speak to and have some fun with it. I'm of the impression as far as like entrepreneurship where you sign the front of checks. Mm-hmm. Like you have payroll or you have bills. There's things that are outgoing that you pay for. You've established something. I'm not... Mm-hmm. So, and I don't want to be disrespectful, you know, but I don't necessarily consider multi-level marketing entrepreneurship.
It's not.
There are some things where you can turn that into a business, you know, and then that can scale and go somewhere else. I know there's a couple people that do that. So I'm not trying to be disrespectful to MLMers. For the majority, it's not. It's just side hustle and whatever you want to call it. I don't want to, I'm not going to speak negatively too, because I'm not against it. I'm against harassing your friends and family bringing value. Yeah. I'm against that, but that goes across the board. That is not just, you know, MLM, but no. When we're talking entrepreneurship today, we're going to kind of get into like what we mean specifically, but we're talking real entrepreneurship, signing front of checks, bills going out, no safety net, last line of defense kind of shit.
Well, here's one thing I think people need to ask themselves is, you know, a lot of people will think, and I thought this for a lot of years too, and until I started being a little harder on myself, there's a big difference between creating a job for yourself and being an entrepreneur. A lot of people, even as a real estate agent, you have your own business, you're doing your own thing, you're relying on you only. However, if you stop, no money's coming in. You know, that's the big thing to me is a successful business will work and make you money and function. Whether you're directly a part of it or not, you go on vacation for 2 weeks, a real business should still be producing and should still be bringing in income.
Yeah. Be careful with real business.
Real entrepreneurship, I should say.
Right. So you're saying if you stop and money stops coming in, then you're self-employed.
Correct.
You're like by yourself. Realtors,
yeah.
Right? You're self-employed.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely think that it comes down to your goals and what you want to be and how do you want to approach business. And if you want more or not necessarily more, but different, if you want something different, if you want to scale, I also think you can't skip self-employment.
Correct. I agree.
I could be wrong.
I agree.
There's a lot of youngsters driving Lambos and YouTube videos that probably have never done anything and maybe they're making a dime. I don't know. I can't speak to it. But what I can speak to, especially like for you and I, like now we're really growing into entrepreneurship and we've got some cool business things that are evergreen and will produce and scale and really cool stuff. And I'm excited for that stuff. However, you know, you and I definitely started as being self-employed and you've got, and I guess we call it the hustle or the grind. Mm-hmm. The non-romantic version, I guess in my head is self-employed and like, yeah, if you stop, it stops, but you've got to like, and for me, I think it's because I'm still at heart a practitioner.
Yeah.
And that's due to like the Marine Corps. We're going to get into some of like my entrepreneur stuff and yours, because we come from a completely different path. But I definitely feel like you've just got to be that subject matter expert, and you've got to be a practitioner at your craft before you can scale yourself or your business to where it's making income without you necessarily doing every single little thing. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how people try to do that, but they can't, you know, kind of like owning a tattoo shop, but you're not a tattoo artist. Mm-hmm. It could be a horrible example because I don't own a tattoo shop and I'm not a tattooer, but I definitely feel like, how do you know the ins and outs, and how do you know how tattoo artists tick,
right,
and what motivates them to do more, and what are they going to want? What's their pay structure going to want to be? Mm-hmm. And how do you incentivize them? And are you actually doing tattoos yourself to create revenue for your business and because you still love it? And then is there mutual respect to the guys in the shop, you know, that you rent space out to because you're actually in the game? Or are you this guy that's completely detached? Mm-hmm. I feel like if you do that practitioner side first and you own a shop, if you end up owning 5 or 6 or 10 shops, but you're well known and you've done that craft and you come from those people, I just feel like the level of respect is going to be there. Like for you and I doing, you know, real estate, now that we're expanding and there's other people, you know, that other people that can do things for us per se, or that we're giving deals to go run the deals and be buyer agents or whatever it looks like. I'm being vague. If you don't know the ins and outs of that, how are you mentoring them, coaching them? How are you the engine to continue to scale that business if you don't actually know how to do the business itself? So self-employed, for me, I feel like that's the grind, that's the hustle. Like you can't get away with it. And it's the same thing in the Marine Corps, man. Like how are you going to be a squad leader of infantrymen if you don't come from the infantry? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you how. It's not allowed. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot. Like,
gotta come there.
There's no such thing, man. Yeah. There's just no such thing. Like you come from the infantry, man. Like,
yeah.
So I think that's just how my tick. Yeah. I could be wrong. There could be some folks that have some comments of where, you know, so maybe some areas where it does work. I don't know. I just, not my thing.
Well, I'm glad we're having this conversation today, man, because I think it's a conversation that needs to be had, because I think it's super easy for people to fall into the trap of needing to act like an entrepreneur just because they're calling themselves an entrepreneur. And here's the dangerous part to that is you may try, using your example, you may try opening that tattoo shop because, you know, maybe you want to be an investor, you know some guys that are in it, but how the fuck are you going to know how to manage that business if you don't know the ins and outs of it? So one thing that concerns me, man, is a lot of people forget self-employed. Let's talk being an employee. A lot of people overlook the fact that, like, hey, if there's, let's say, something you do want to get into, right? You should be an employee in that field first to get a feel for what that's like. And man, to me, that is such a good way to hack the system, dude. Like, let's say you're opening a, I don't know, Baskin Robbins or something.
Let's call it a pizza shop.
A pizza shop. Okay.
Because we did that. I did that.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So looking at it that way, man, if you don't understand profit margins and who the suppliers are, and if you don't, as an employee, man,
how many pepperonis go on a pizza?
Dude, you get insights to all of that as an employee, and maybe you're an employee for a month before going in.
Well, when you run a business, man, you got to know how to cut costs, or you at least have to know how to, like, keep costs where it should be.
Right, right.
Right, and you just have to know, like, are people showing up on time? Are they cooking the pizzas right? Are you showing them how to do it? As an owner, man, like, when you come in, you've got part-time employees.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that, like, when I was toward the end of my police career. I had an acquaintance of mine who owned a ton of Papa Murphy's, mm-hmm. and he was wanting to do blackjack pizzas and other traditional places because there's margin like crazy in pizza. There's margin like crazy if you order appropriately and you're putting the right amount of cheese and pepperonis and things on pizza.
Right.
And they're cooked the same exact way because now you can track that. But if you aren't doing that yourself and figuring out, like, hey, where to cut cost or what's consistent with branding and how it should be. And then, dude, people, no one cares more about your shit than you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You think part-timers are coming in and abiding by how much cheese and pepperoni and peppers go on a pizza if you're not there creating a good culture, leading from the front and counting your shit?
Creating systems around.
And you got to incentivize, because at some point, you know, if you got to get to where you're super good at that yourself and you're tracking it and you're documenting everything and it's running like a top, then you've got to have a manager, right? This is where you start talking about building a chain of command. You have to build someone for your position in order to promote yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you want to promote yourself to where you're now working on your business instead of in your business, you got to incentivize a manager that's super on board, has that in him to want to please and excel and do a great job, and you pay him, you know, a decent amount. So he's not going somewhere else. So he's happy with what he's doing. He's also holding other people accountable and you can trust him, but you've got to work with him for a while. And you got to kind of build that within. And this is also why a lot of companies like to promote within versus always reaching out. There's a lot of companies that are super big with promoting within. I think Google's one of them, but that's the way the Marine Corps is. You promote within and, you know, and, but you've got to have that. And then you still have to run checks and balances on that guy. Cause as he becomes a new leader and he gets busier with creating schedules for shifts, is he still monitoring how the pizza's going in and out? Is he slacking off and just doing the deliveries and not managing the kitchen? Is he watching the clock on deliveries? And so you still have to, now you still have to manage that guy and make sure that he actually is a good leader.
Well, and here's one of the things that you're going to have to deal with as an entrepreneur or business owner. When that guy gets that promotion, guess where that money's coming from? It's probably not in the company yet. It's probably coming from you. Yeah. Probably coming from your paycheck and your money. So here's one thing. You've got to handle some guy being in a lower position than you, but getting paid way more than you. Usually that's the case. Until that business hits the fifth or tenth year or something, a lot of times you're not making money. You're not getting paid. Your employees are getting paid way more than you. A lot of people don't realize that.
Dude, I remember when our team was crushing, right? I think we were top 1%.
Yep.
At this point, or right about at it. And somebody made a comment to you like, oh man, you're fucking making it, bro. Dude, you're successful. You're that man, I bet it's fucking awesome. And you're like, my bank account's negative 300. Yep. Like, fuck, bro.
Yeah, dude.
And the total, you know, the amount of total deals that you and I were doing, you know, had gone down because we were teaching our team how to do deals. And that's the bottom line, man. Like, they have to get mentored and taught because that the amount of energy, it's kind of like a rocket ship, man. Getting that rocket off the ground is a lot more significant than when once it's in orbit. Right? It can ride centrifugal force and things, you know, about the atmosphere thing, whatever. Space shit that I don't know about. They can turn the, they can come off the throttle. The earth lets it fucking spin around it, right? Cool. And they use its momentum, right? But you got to get up there first. And our deals went down, but our team was producing. But that was our goal from the get-go, man. We were like, hey, we don't want to do more than 30% of our team, because if we're up there doing 40, 60, 90% of our team's production, we're not training anyone. They're not proficient. They're just riding our wave and they're doing a couple deals here and there. But like, man, we're still in it doing all the work. But you know, again, at some point you have to start there. Because so let's go back to the pizza thing. If you have a manager, but you don't know what you're doing, you're relying off him. How do you know he's not eating a pizza a day, every day for lunch? How do you know like the orders that he's making, like, could you cut costs? Because there's just too much cheese or too much going to the waste, whatever it may be. Like, how do you know? You know what I mean? Unless you're there and you know, like, hey, this is how it's got to run. This is how it's got to be. It works. It's efficient. And then you hold him accountable to your standard with what you know is proficient. If you're just taking someone's word for it, man, like, you ever go to a mechanic shop and just take a guy's word?
It's
not the best way to go about it, right? Yeah. So, again, the self-employed thing is cool. And when were you... I kind of want to jump into your, you had a bunch of bullshit you did growing up, right?
I did a bunch of bullshit.
Well, I was protecting you, keeping you safe, serving our country. You were running amok. I want to just make, I just want to make sure that like everyone knows that. Happy Monday, Eli. While I was out keeping you safe, you were just out there doing your thing. Chinese food, whatever you were doing. But no, it's an interesting thing. I want to know when you went from like these little side hustles to when you felt like you kind of had like self-employed or entrepreneur tendencies that then turned into actual entrepreneurship.
Man, I think it was, I don't know if there was ever a certain time. I just know that, I mean, throughout my whole childhood and young adulthood, I just always had a very much do whatever it takes mentality. And it was kind of a mixture of, because I'm not afraid of hard work, man. I got employed as soon as I could. And my first job, man, I was at a vet's office. Veterinarian, and I loved it because, and maybe this is where it started, man, because literally my first job, it was, hey, as long as we're closed, come in here whenever you want, clean up all the shit, leave whenever you want, it's good in the morning. So they closed at 7 o'clock, so if I got there at 7, it was fine. If I got there at 9, it was fine. If I wanted to go party with friends and get there at 1 in the morning, it just had to be done by the time they opened at 6.
Okay, so you have some freedom.
All good. Yeah. So I think that was kind of my first taste of, hey, hard work, getting a job done. I'm literally cleaning up dog shit every day, but it's on my own accord, right? And no way are they opening that place up without me having done my deal there, you know? So it was kind of like on me. And plus, man, even as a kid, like the whole homeschooling thing you're always giving me shit about, it was like, I knew I can get this stuff done.
To our listeners, I've never done that, Eli.
I've
don't put the camera on me. I don't know. Trying to get my conspicuous face.
I don't know if it's a slight problem with, I don't want to say authority per se, because I'm fine with authority. I just don't want to do things on other people's time and other people's, I don't know, man. It's from the get-go, it was just, I want to do my own thing. When I want to do it, I'll fucking get it done. I'll do a great job, but I just want to do my own thing. So
the idea of just clocking in and clocking out drives you nuts.
Drives me from day one.
But I don't think homeschool put you down that path. I think that's probably why you were successful at homeschool. Because some kids, for me, I would have hated homeschool.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of had to go, at least for that time in my life, like, if someone wanted me to, like, do my homework or, like, watch class. Mm-hmm. When I had sports, you know, like, I had to be at the school.
That's true.
Now, yeah. I guess, could you be homeschooled and just play sports for whatever district you come from? I'm guessing you could.
Nowadays, it's easier.
I'm sure you could. Yeah. But there was no way. I just sat there and listened to some video class and got my homework done. Like, I had to be in school, in class, around other people. Like, okay, I'm learning.
Yep.
You know, I'm obviously a talker. You know, I didn't talk much in class, but, I'd go and I'd show up and do what I had to do. But I could not imagine. Mm-hmm. So I think I would have sucked at homeschool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the sports thing, man, I didn't have that either.
Even now, you go home at night, you're doing some of our editing. You're doing some Canvas stuff for our real estate shit.
I think I just like doing
that. Yeah, man, I'll get it to you tomorrow. Like, and obviously, like, I'm not your boss. Mm-hmm. I never was like, hey, dude, I need to, unless there's like something we just have to get out right this second, you just do it right then. But really, it's just like, hey, man, what media content do we need out there for our real estate?
Right.
What are we updating? What's going on? You're like, yeah, cool. And then if you get it done at 1 o'clock, I don't care. Then I get it the next day and we'll post it or whatever. Cool. Yeah. So same thing.
Well, and always like, and from that, it kind of evolved into just being financially driven, man. And I would always, you know, when I'm looking at a job or something, I'm doing the math. All right, how much am I going to make? Fuck, I got to work. How much to make that much? That's like, not
dude,
cool.
I'm making $70 an hour or a day.
Little did I know that I would be broke for so long trying to not have to work for somebody else and trying to make money. But it's one of those things, man, like, you know, and I just kind of got this like, hey, I'm cool not making money right now. I'm cool not making money for the next 10 years, putting money into business, trying different things, seeing what I like. I didn't go to college. That's my tuition, right? You know, everything comes with a price, but I'm like, if I can sacrifice 10 years of just getting by, then man, I bet those next 10 years and those next 10 years and those next 10 years are going to be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Versus just going to getting a job at a bank and climbing the ranks, but then you've got your cap and you know.
Did you have any job that you just hated after like vet work? Was there any job that you just did in the meantime while you were, or was every job you ever had just
I
like,
worked, no, I worked.
I know you were like a carpet cleaner.
I worked.
You're like a vacuum guy.
Those I was doing myself though, so that was cool.
Right.
Super embarrassing. I worked at Kohl's. I didn't like that. Retail, no bueno. And then I think I told you, man, I had my shortest job ever was about 3 hours. I was a valet down at the Marriott downtown. That was a terrible 3 hours. That was terrible. And I'm not a quitter either, but I did 3 hours there. I'm like, hey, guys.
I feel like everything I've done in my life, terrible is such a strong word.
It was terrible.
So I'm starting to think of like a terrible 3 hours for me.
Yeah, probably a little different.
Like, was it
probably
terrible?
A little different.
But I also know what you mean. Just like
my shirt was really baggy, bro.
Oh, dude, terrible. Tell the story about that. Tell it.
You're so fickle. You go in there. Everyone's probably done this, but it's like, yeah, you go in there and they give you a little polo shirt. And, oh, hey, we're out of
shift
everything
work.
But 3Xs, you know, so it's 180-pound Eli walking around in a 3X polo shirt, sprinting around Denver trying to park dually trucks and stuff on day one. I'm like, and then talking to the guys about what they get paid and they pool their tips. I think that was the breaking point for me, because if I got to keep my tips, cool, I can crush. I know how to talk to people. I know I can do well with tips. But if we're pooling everything and that stoner over there who's not talking to anybody gets the same amount as like me who's talking to people and trying to engage and actually do good service, I'm not cool with that either, man. I want to keep what I earn.
True. And I think for me, like later on with the, cause I didn't even consider myself an entrepreneur until later in life. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think when you're sitting there, like count, like even at that, even if you do get to keep your own tips, how many times do you have the anomaly? Someone tips you $100.
Yeah. Rare.
Very rare.
Yeah.
They'll tip you $10, maybe 20, probably 10, maybe five.
Mm-hmm.
And you can probably look at a schedule and like, okay, how many cars come a day? I mean, that business is driving traffic. There's going to be patterns of how many cars come a day and then how many guys are on shift. You're going to be able to look at like, man, like even if I crush every single day with my highest tip ever and I add my highest tip on top of every client I see every day, you have a ceiling. Same thing with like personal training. If you're going to be doing all the personal training, how many clients can you see a day? Mm-hmm. 6 or 7?
Yeah.
And people think, no, you could probably do 10 clients a day. No, you can't.
Bro.
Dude, you're tapped.
Yeah, you are.
You're tapped out. You're talking 6 clients a day. You're moving.
And your own workout. And you're engaged with people. Yeah. Like,
but even
tough.
That, like, there's only a certain amount you can charge for a session. And then whatever you're, you know, if you're at your own studio, you give a little bit away to the studio that you're using. Or, you know, if you're at 24 Hour Fitness School, they take a cut. But it's still math. It's still, okay, well, how can I get more money per session? If you have higher certs, I think 24 is give you more of your, you know, your deal.
But group training and then scaling
gonna,
online.
You're only going to be able to to charge.
It's still.
So that's why, like, some of these guys, you know, like the Bradley Martins of the world, right, where, like, they do online training. It's evergreen, and people can buy it across the damn world, and it's getting purchased, but they're not having to physically put themselves in front of one client at a time.
They're building a product.
They're building a product. Now they become nostalgic and fancy, so if they do actually train someone, now they can charge more.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that does keep them relevant because they're still in that practitioner side, but they can charge more. But it's that scalability of going online for them that really changed the game in personal training, right?
Yeah.
The Steve Cooks and the Bradley Martins of the world. It was scaling because, again, dude, even if you can charge more per session, unless you're training who? Brad Pitt? Even Brad Pitt's only going to pay so
Don't
much
matter.
Per session, man. Like,
yeah.
Or like Gary Vee, someone travels with Gary Vee, but you're not making $300,000 a year. In front of every person you see.
You've got, well, and what Bradley's done super well, man, is just build that personal brand. So it's like now once you have that personal
supplements,
brand.
Clothing.
Oh, yeah. Ad revenue from YouTube. Like, literally, I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
But he started as a practitioner. And I'm not saying you got to like Bradley Martin. If you do, great. If you don't, great. We're just talking about the business model. And it's an example that's relevant for our time. But that guy did start as a practitioner, man. He just started at, I'm a trainer. And he was training people. And then he caught on to, like, social media, started posting himself. Obviously, he looks great. Kind of a cool dude. You know, so he started scaling social media. And then from there, it was like, yeah, man, online training. He was writing things out himself, you know, having people help it, putting it onto his app or onto his website, creating clothing, creating supplements. Then he built his own gym. Now you got paying members come.
You're scaling.
Yeah. And so that's where, like, so it's like taking that one platform.
Yeah.
And how many doors can that open? And are you taking advantage of that? You know, and I think at its basic form, you know, looking at Bradley Martin with just training clients every single day to what it's turned into now, I think it's a great example of, like, how everybody can kind of look at it. Even for you and I, man, like, just we went from just helping a client to teaching other agents to how to help clients. And while we were training other agents, we were creating material that we were giving them or using to coach them that is turning into online boot camps.
Right.
And then from there turns into do other agents want to be a part of your world with what you're doing? Put yourself in a place where other agents can be around you, whether you're in the United States or Canada. They can be a part of your team. Cool. So now it's not, they don't have to be just in the office that you're in. They can be on your team regardless of where they're at. So
that's
find a model that fits that. Boom. Yep. So then you have that plus your boot camps. But then you can also still create attention, like through YouTube and other stuff that we're doing, to still attract clients. So now we have two different types of clients. We have agents that technically are our clients because we're helping them, right? You have that. And you still have your typical client that are looking to sell and buy.
Right.
And if you scale both of them, right, and you build a machine that helps still make sure that everything is getting done, now you're starting to scale and you start building a brand around that.
Now, after getting to know you, man, I think I see those entrepreneurial tendencies in you that you may have not recognized before. Like, even just you mentioning growing up in Park Hill and how you would go and mow people's lawns, not for money, but just so they knew you were cool.
Some of them. But the other side, it was money, man. Like, when I was growing up, my mom kind of fed me that idea. Like, whatever money you make, you know, you can make it. And she's like, but you're using my mower, so you got to put gas in it. So I would have to pay for the gas.
Business expenses.
Yeah, business expenses. But I'd go out, man, and I remember thinking of, like, how much time it would take me to mow a lawn. And it was, hey, $20, I'll mow your lawn. And some people were like, well, I'll give you 10. I'm like, all right, fuck it. Because it's like, oh, it's still $10. And I'm still doing the math of, like, how much I can make in a day. Is it worth it to, like, how much time is it going to take me to do it? And all good. And I still think a lot of it came through, like, the Marine Corps. But how much the Marine Corps promotes small unit leadership, you know, from team leader, squad leader on up, man. Like, improvise, adapt, and overcome. And when you're in the Marine Corps during a time of war, we had 2 foreign wars going on. You can't be micromanaged. There's just too much going on that leaders at every level have to improvise, adapt, and overcome, communicate, and execute, man. and it taught you how to just constantly overcome obstacles and think against the grain or think outside of the box and still achieve a lot of cool shit. And then when I got out into like the civilian sector, cop role was cool. I saw my future. That's where I started counting money as was when I was a cop of like, okay, what rank am I? I make this much per check. All right, how much does a sergeant make? You know, like how much does a lieutenant makes $16,000 more than me? Like divide that by a month.
Yeah.
By 12 months. Like,
not that much.
But you're seeing the work that they're putting in and they're saying, you know, and also what hit me was officers talking about their retirement, their 401ks and their deferred comps that they lost on the market, mm-hmm. you know, during like 08 or 09 or whatever it was, not just the housing market, but the economy crashed too. Right. Or for lack of a better term, they had to work like 10 more years just to make back what they had made, man. And you know, like my dad was an entrepreneur, I had some friends that were entrepreneurs and I just remember like seeing my future and there was more micromanagement in the police world. It was more of a bureaucracy and not that I'm saying like military doesn't have that, but when there's two foreign wars going on, there's just more important shit than the fucking babysit you. They just had bigger shit to deal with and they were relying on small unit leaders to just be creative and just do a great job. That's where like you can kind of cowboy out. And then when we were instructors, that's when it was really hitting me. When I was an instructor, I was the counter sniper instructor at division schools. Mm-hmm. Man, and we would have class after class after class and it was constantly new doctrine because guys were getting off of deployments, but then they would come to our school and have other stuff to talk about that was almost more relevant than what we were talking about because they were over there most recent and you had to somehow turn that into doctrine and ask the right questions and verify stuff and see if there's a pattern, if it was just one guy's experience or if there's a pattern there and we want to teach it and then communicating with other guys. But man, there were so many courses going on, like your school director and the gunnery sergeants that were there. Mm-hmm. We had Gunny Scott, man. He was in charge of a urban assault leaders course. You know, he came out to the field to have fun and talk shit to us. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't come out to like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Nah, man, like, he's a gunny. He's like, hey, you're an instructor for a reason. This is not, you know, and in the Marine Corps, man, like you got to get recommended to be an instructor and approved. And, okay. And they made it very clear. You're not coming here at the end of your term to come chill. Mm-hmm. Guys are coming here to train and deploy and it's important. So you had to train hard. And just in the Marine Corps itself, man, like if you were slack, people call you out, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. So we kind of had to just cowboy out and just get creative with like getting ranges scheduled and getting training done. And if you don't have enough of the right equipment, how can you make it savvy? And every guy was a practitioner. So you knew how to make things savvy and good enough to get training done. And I realized like, man, they made more entrepreneurs out of us than I realized. And it didn't hit me until later because then I'm helping a buddy with a fitness company and he owns it. I was number two and he gave me an opportunity to help him grow it, which is phenomenal, right? Being number two in a company. I had a great background. We used to talk a lot. He did think well of me, but still, man, I had never done the entrepreneur thing. And he gave me a huge opportunity to be director of operations. And I got super creative and I didn't know necessarily entrepreneurship or entrepreneur tendencies because I was still number two, but he couldn't pay me. I was getting paid off of, hey, if we make enough in sales, because don't get me wrong, I had a salary.
Yeah.
But my salary was predicated on if we made enough money or not.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, I still had to go out and hustle and create my own income. Even though my income was a salary base, I had to go create it because we didn't have the funds for it. Right. So entrepreneur tendencies, it let me dab. I'm like, you know, I'm in the kiddie pool per se. Right.
Dipping your toe in a little bit.
And, I got, you know, I didn't know necessarily the business side, but I knew culture. I knew how to motivate people. I knew how to bring people around each other and making people want to be a part of something, whether it was fitness or not. I knew how to influence people the right way through truth, through storytelling, through trials and tribulations, and also giving them an opportunity to be a part of that company. So when you throw like little workouts or you're doing giveaways or you're doing weight loss challenges or you're having some of your customers tell their own stories, I knew how to give opportunity to let people be a part of something, not just watch it, but be a part of it.
Right.
And it was taking off and it was good. And that was my first time of like, man, I think I could do this, but man, I didn't really consider myself an entrepreneur, man, like 31 years old. Mm-hmm. But it was all of these other career paths that I took. It was a youngster kid, right? Like mowing lawns and making 10 bucks or 20 bucks. And hey, just don't tell your neighbor I'm hooking you up for 10 because he pays 20, man. You know, I'll give you a deal, but don't go rat me out. You know, like non-disclosures, right?
Yeah.
And just doing that as a kid. And then my mom, you know, like we grew up poor-ish, I guess you could say. But it was like, yeah, if you want a car, you got to pay for it. Mm-hmm. If you want more, you know, I get two pairs of jeans and two shirts at the beginning of the school year. And in the spring, I'd get two shorts and two shirts, short sleeve shirts in the spring. And if you want more clothes than that, you just got to go work.
Yeah, you
got to. And my parents weren't mean about it. It was just like, hey, man, that's what we got. So I started learning the benefit of like doing that when I was, and I worked at Foot Locker during high school, and I was number one in sales for those green soles that you could
inserts that you put
in the shoes. And, you know, like you cut them to fit and like you could show like, you know, but I would put them, I knew like no one wanted to spend $20 on an insole and let, you know, but there was value to it. And I remember putting some on, I'm like, dude, these are dope. These are great.
And you were sold on it.
And you had to go an extra step. You had to take the insole out of a shoe and put the new one in. Some people would just put the one on top of the other to let people try it, but your foot's way too far out of the shoe.
Yep.
So I knew like there was a couple brands that did not sew their insoles, Nike being one of them.
Yeah.
So I knew like if someone was trying to Nike, I'm like, oh, golden.
Yeah.
Golden, right? And while I was in the back, I already had some pre-cut ones that I purchased myself because I knew like the 9.5s, it would kind of wrinkle on the inside. You kind of had to shave them a little bit.
Right.
Some would just fit to a T, but couple didn't. You had to kind of shave them, and so I had them in the back. And if somebody was trying on a certain name brand shoe, especially Nike, I was throwing an insole in the back.
Yeah.
So then when I would take it out, I let them try it. They fucking loved it.
They're like,
bro, hey, check it out. You play ball, right? Like, yep. You're buying a basketball shoe, and like, hey, they ball. Cool. Hey, let me pull this out. Hey, check this out. And it's got a lifetime warranty. If this breaks, if this damn whatever, yeah. Hey, bro, it's $19.
They already felt it though.
Dude, I was crushing. Made no extra money for crushing that, but I didn't necessarily need extra money for that. I just love, dude, being at the top of the scoreboard every time like numbers would come out and the district manager would come compliment you or like, hey, what are these guys doing right? And then they ask you how you're doing it so they could help other people, and no one wanted to put that amount of effort into it, but I was crushing. It felt fucking cool to you know, to crush. Or like the waterproof shit for your shoes, it does work. You know what we did is we sprayed half of a paper towel. Yep. The cardboard paper towel from the back room. We sprayed half of it, didn't spray the other half, and just left it in a little Tupperware thing of water by the register. So they could see,
this paper towel is
sitting in water and it's dry.
Yeah.
Versus this one, it's all soaked and it's wearing down. And they could see the value. But I loved like that hustle of just trying to, I think that was my competitive nature.
Mm-hmm.
I think also that's why I excelled in the Marine Corps. But the Marine Corps definitely forced you to like, hey, your squad, that's like your business, and these are your employees, and literally how well you're going to be successful on deployment or not is going to be predicated on how well you guys work as a cohesive unit together and how well you communicate and train them. Because it is on a squad leader to train their squad, man. And during that time, like, they didn't have time to fucking bullshit with you. You're either savvy or you're not. And I definitely took off with loving that it was mine and it was my responsibility to train, in addition to the competition of just having the best fucking squad.
I think something that's super helpful there that you mentioned, man, is having that mindset of how can I make something better? Even if there's no financial gain for you or if there's nothing in it for you per se, if you're looking at something and not fixing something just for the sake of trying to change something, right, that works just fine, but actually looking at what you're involved in and say, hey, whether this is mine or not, can I have any influence to make this better? You know, so for like you having that special one cut up in the back and just seeing, hey, can I just do this better than other people are doing it? Can I just give a shit? And I think that's such a good skill that a lot of entrepreneurs naturally have, is just constantly looking around at things that they see and just experiences that they have, frustrations that they experience, and stopping and thinking, hey, how can I make this better? And actually taking action and doing it and applying that.
Or just making it your own. I liked it. Dirty third, man. Third squad. Like, they knew, like, that's Grimes' squad. You know, like, as an instructor, man, like, guys were super high level at that point. And you didn't want to, like, be shitty at teaching your classes. But it was very entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
As in, like, hey, when a course comes on board and you're teaching classes, you better be dialed in. You better know your material and how you're teaching. Yeah. You better be good at it. And if you're not, teach other instructors your class so they can critique you, right? Make sure that you're getting any updated information on your shit. Be proficient out in the field, because if you're not, other instructors at that level, you don't need gunnies and captains to come call you out. Other sergeants are going to be like, hey, bro.
And I bet.
You're full of shit. Yeah, what have you been doing? But no one's on your ass to go role play. No one's on your ass to ask to teach a class. They just expect you as a sergeant, man. Like, you better know if you need help, cool. Because other sergeants will sit in one of your classes and let you teach, you know? But you gotta take the initiative to seek that. To get that help, or if guys are going to go drink some beers or have some fun, because if they're dialed in, they're not assuming that you're not dialed in. You're all sergeants at that point.
Yeah.
But I loved it, man. And I think also, too, like, just not wanting to be a number, right? So when I first got into real estate, I was also looking at Punch Bowl Social. I had an interview with one of the managers, and had a great time. This is like bar and grill / recreation areas and cool spot, man. And
restaurant industry is a beast, man.
It is. Ugh. But, you know, and I was like, oh, you know, good with people. And this was me being afraid of entrepreneurship. Yeah. This was me, even though like I had bought my course, you know, Kate bought it for me, but we had the course, online course.
The real estate course.
I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah. I'll start taking it. I'm like, I start studying. I'm like, oh, fuck. You got to study again. And no matter how much college I did, man, like,
it sucks.
You still hate studying. Yeah,
it sucks.
And you start doubting yourself. And then that comfort comes in of like, oh, I'll still make a couple calls just to keep my options open, right? Keep my options open. And I did. And of course, I go do an interview, man. I had a great time with the guy and Crush. And he's like, God, guys like you don't interview, man, like for these. And he wanted to make me head of his security and for a new location I was opening. But you still got to go learn how they operate as security. You know, I talked about being a cop for a long time and was probably overqualified for the pay and for the position, but that was okay because I told him my ambition was to, I'd love to grow up in their ranks and be a manager, a divisional guy, and grow up in those ranks. And he gave me great advice. He's like, yeah, man, those are all great things. He goes, but first and foremost, just make sure you like the industry because it's a little different, man. It's restaurant stuff and food and late nights, and I'm okay with late nights. I'm okay, with, you know. You might not be okay with late nights in the context of a restaurant, though. Like, it's not the same as, like, late nights in the Marine Corps, right? And you go, I did my onboarding cool, and then, you know, like, you got to call every... Oh, you know what pissed me off, too, bro? And I don't know why. It wasn't my ego. I've been new. Dude, especially in the Marine Corps, anytime you go to a new school or you pick up a new rank, you're new, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But just calling chefs. Yes, chef. No, chef.
Oh, they made you guys do that shit?
Fuck, bro.
Yeah, I did that shit.
Stop, man. I'm not calling you chef, like, in... You know, like, I felt like I had to talk in third person, like, this recruit requests permission to speak to chef, sir. Like, bro, fuck.
Kitchen staff should call chef. Yeah. Outside of that.
Thanks, bro. You know, or just not saying anything at all. But, you know, so I go through onboarding. We're learning, we're memorizing drinks. We're memorizing dishes because they had they're like a 5-star restaurant in addition to their social atmospheres. Most people don't know that. But Punch Bowl Social takes their food serious and it's phenomenal. And so... memorizing drinks, how to hold a plate. Like, I got huge. I'll hold a plate. Nope, you got to hold a plate.
Carry martini glasses.
What I realized was, man, I am not passionate to start over at this.
Yeah.
I was not significant. So, but I get through it because we're getting ready to open the new location. And before the new location opens up, we all go to this onboarding.
Dude, who the fuck was training you, bro? I'm just picturing, I'm like, oh, man, I could imagine being like some restaurant trainer.
They were nice
guys. And then they were nice, yeah.
I can't remember his first name, but I didn't meet a bad guy over there, man. Yeah. Like, they take their food seriously. The managers were on point, man, for what they had to be.
I just couldn't imagine training a guy, because I did a lot of restaurant time, too, and
but you remember
people.
Me in Omaha. Remember how, dude, like, you when you and I went to go watch a guy, Jeff, in Omaha, and how he ran his business, you were like, oh, man. And you were nervous about me going, because you're like, oh, he's going to rip this apart, or have condescending questions.
Yeah, we didn't know each other that well.
True, but I went there, and I shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when people know me for real estate, and I'm advising you, of course I'm talking. If we're on a podcast, and we're talking our lens, of course I'm talking. That's what I'm paid to do right now, is talk. But when I go learn... Dude, I'm quiet.
You're learning.
I shut my mouth because even if I disagree with something, there might be a reason why they do it that way. And you might think you got a better way to, oh, hey, why don't we just do that spreadsheet like this? Thanks, bro. So 4 years ago, when we did it like that, this happened, which is why we had to go, cool. And that's you have to know enough, dude, to just know, like, even if you think you have a better way to do it, they might be doing it that way for a reason. Just run the play.
Right.
Before you're an offensive coordinator, pick it. Just run the damn play, would you? Like, we have a system here. You're trying to get into the system on this conveyor belt.
Just go.
You're not special. Just run the play.
Yeah.
And over time, you build value. And if you have better ways of doing things, over time, you will warrant a stage to talk.
Yeah.
Right? But not, you know, so onboarding,
there
were nice guys that were dialed in. But then I go to onboarding for our new location now. So it's a second onboarding / introduction night at one of the hotels that was close to the location. And just everybody there, I just like, It wasn't any disrespect to people that were going to be employees there or whatever. You know, I just signing in and no one caring. And I'm just like, ah, this isn't me.
Yeah, you knew it.
This isn't me. I knew, like, I'm trying to fit into something that's not me. And again, I'd been new before. I wasn't new to being a new cop. I wasn't new to being a new rank. I wasn't, you know, new to anything when I was new in the Marine Corps. Like, I was new to being new, but I never had a problem being new and earning my keep, per se. But I was passionate about police work.
Yeah.
I was passionate about the Marine Corps. I was like, man, I'm not passionate about this. I could give a fuck what that drink is. Like, yep, restaurant. Like, whatever I'm going to go be new at now that I'm creating a new endeavor for myself, it's not at this. And it was just, man, there's just... You're also, everything is predicated on whether they like you or if there's an opportunity to be a general manager. those opportunities have to pop up. You might have to fly out of state for them because they're opening all over the country now, but not more in Colorado. So, okay, well, you just want to stay over here at this location and be a shift manager or be lead security and make no money until another one opens in Colorado or when they like you, just like 24-Hour Fitness is. Oh, hey, no, we'd love to have you as a general manager, but you got to go to Seattle for that promotion. And then from there, you want to be a district guy? Cool, because we have a new district opening on the East Coast. You're going to live in Virginia. And guess what? That's how that goes, dude. We've seen a lot of – we've got friends in 24-Hour Fitness. Sucks that they're going out – you know, they're bankruptcy and they're shutting down now. But prior to that, when they were booming, I've seen a lot of friends make a lot of money and get promotions and be the company man and do what they're supposed to do because they needed good people to do that kind of stuff.
Right.
They went all over the country and were different managers, sometimes a general manager for several different gym locations before they ever got an opportunity at district. So I'm okay with stuff like that when you're passionate about it. I just knew this restaurant stuff wasn't for me. And I also felt like, especially after Fit Republic being number two in a company, it was time to just do my own thing. So even though I was starting fresh at real estate and it was brand new and I'm all out on my own, it was a step forward. It was a step in the right direction. I had no business going from my experience and then being number two in a fitness company to being a busboy. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, to be a busboy because you're passionate about that industry and you grew up cooking or you ran trucks, whatever, cool. Not for me, man. It just wasn't the right. And you gotta learn how to feel momentum shifts or energy shifts and just know like, nah. So then I went back. I'm like, okay, I was doing that for comfort because I was scared of studying and I was scared to go out on my own in real estate and not attack it. But that didn't feel good. I need to go back to this fear threshold over here and just conquer that and go crush.
Mm-hmm. Well, dude, that's something people, I'm glad you said that. I want them to realize, man, it's not fucking cool, man. Like there's a lot of hard shit. There's a lot of stuff that you'll get up and running and then have to scratch it all because it ain't working or some other opportunity comes up. But entrepreneurship, man, it's scary, dude. And it takes a long, long time. You know, my first real business that I had, I was about 17 years old and I'm just now getting to the point. I'm still not comfortable calling myself an entrepreneur because if I stop work for a month, money's not coming in, right?
Correct.
Like some money will, but not enough to sustain. So
we're right on that cusp of like that evergreen. And that's what we're building right now.
And that's what people need to realize, man, is like, first of all, it takes time. There's a lot of fuck ups, man. There's a lot of being an employee. Yeah. There's a lot of being self-employed. There's a lot of, oh shit, I have to pay taxes. Oh shit, I need to learn marketing. Oh shit, I need to learn this.
Yep. You're but I'll say this. Hat. I'm glad you said that, right? Because I know we got to get going here because we're still practitioners. Some we got to work today. We got to go work today, guys. I'm glad you said that because all of that suck, per se, for lack of a better term, is worth it being your hustle, your grind, everything that you want to develop into yourself versus going and working for the man, quote unquote, right? Not that working for the man, obviously that's a slang term. You might love your career. I was a career guy until this, you know what I mean? Yep. There's a lot of great careers you can do and they give you a long leash and they let you be creative. And if you can find those type of careers, good on you. But as far as like for you, that pain and that grind, it builds who you are. Mm-hmm. And just, dude, the days where we crush, you make $60,000 in a day.
Yep.
You can't do that at certain careers, right? So it's like that rush and that progress, but it sucks. Hey, this is why you and I are two in the same, even though, you know, you're better looking than them and you're the workhorse.
Shut up.
And everything you say is twice impactful than I say. Tosh,
motherfucker. Shout out to Tosh. Love you, bro.
He's like our big brother, motherfucker. I'm about to say some meaningful shit, Tosh. Listen up. Still listening. This is why we're still like cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
Because the Marine Corps, especially like infantry, right? Like the lack of food. And when you get food, how crappy those MREs are from like 1989. And you're cold and you're wet and you're hungry and you're tired and you got sand and you're soaked camis. And dude, it's grueling. And training's even more grueling. And when I became an instructor, the responsibility on top of still being out there doing the suck with students, however, it built who we are, right? It was honorable. That level of leadership, that level of expectation and being willing to do what no one else wanted to do, this pride in that, which is why I feel the Marine Corps really gives a lot of credit to me having a lot of entrepreneur tendencies that built into my entrepreneurship now. But, man, it was honorable. But a lot of it sucked. But I think I do, man. I do enjoy the suck and the grind of something. And I also enjoy the endless possibilities of where you can take stuff. Because even where you and I are taking stuff now, we weren't thinking of 2 years ago. Mm-mm. What career can you go into where one thing turns into something completely different and at scale 2 years later and opportunities open up for you that you hadn't even imagined?
Yeah,
not that's a lot. What's so fun about entrepreneurship is the possibility being endless versus when I was a cop. Well, I saw detectives, I saw sergeants, I saw lieutenants, I saw the political side, I saw the bureaucracy, even the good stuff that I saw. I still saw the clocking in and clocking out and what it would,
you know,
versus like us building our own, our own dynasty, our something that is, and I love being able to call something ours. Mm-hmm. I love having a teammate, hence the Marine Corps and police work. And I love that side where you and I are a team, but it's not fun. Isn't the word for it. No, you know what I mean? It's definitely not what the guys are showing online with like, learn how to sell shit on Amazon. Look at me. I'm in a Lambo. Like, and I think everyone knows that's fake now. That's an anomaly. I shouldn't just be using extremes. But even owning a pizza shop, dude, it's it's such a grind. And there's so many non-fun things you do in order to get to 16.
You got
to
be okay with that.
Like with Roland, with how you did that. And it's intriguing to me. And I love being a part of something where it's intriguing and our possibilities are endless. Mm-hmm. And the different things you get involved with are endless. It makes all of that grind and grit and doing things that no one else wants to do, it gives you a sense of pride and it makes it all worth it. And I think that's where you and I are very similar.
Yeah, it absolutely does, man. And on the flip side of that, you could make 60 grand in a day. Like for us, we could get a call tomorrow, some old guy, he's retiring, wants to sell 13 properties that he's acquired, right?
Yep.
Hey guys, I need to sell a big batch. Cool, payday, right? Or nothing could happen tomorrow. To me, that's the most appealing part.
But you got to keep that poise.
That's the most appealing part. I love that shit. I love the risk. I love the possibility of risk. I love the possibility of reward because I know me, I thrive on that, man. Like, that's, if I know, hey, I don't know if I'm getting paid tomorrow. I don't know if my kids eat next week.
Makes you sharp.
Yeah, it does, man.
Makes you accountable, makes you sharp.
If that terrifies you, entrepreneurship probably isn't for you. There's a lot of people where it's like, man, they want their health insurance. They want to know they're getting paid every other Friday. Without that, they can't breathe, you know? Listen to yourself, guys. If that's how you feel, if honestly, the feeling of not getting paid anything for 3 months kind of excites you because you could also make a ton over three months, that might be for you. But if not, I'm not so sure.
However, I'm going to leave everybody with this today. We're going to get into our Monday. Also understand that consistent paycheck every other week and all that and all this and all that and all this, I think especially after COVID now, people understand, hey, just because you have a paycheck right now and it's consistent every other week doesn't mean it's coming. It's coming. So as much as like do I get paid today or not? And maybe I get paid in 3 months, maybe I get paid tomorrow. I'm also reliant upon myself to grow something that's sustainable for me and for you and I. And I can, man, I love betting on you and I.
Yep.
I love knowing that I can fall back and when it gets tough, you and I, dude, like COVID, we had to get super creative. We end up having our busiest months ever during that time in real estate, which dude, a lot of people are scared of it, you know, of real estate during COVID, but we really fell back on betting on ourselves and getting creative and scaling in it. We couldn't have been more busy during that time. Man. Right. And we reap benefit of that. And I'd much rather have that than, but what if your boss doesn't like you?
Yep.
Or what if they're downsizing? Or what if they're filing for bankruptcy? Like, who are they keeping? Who are they not keeping? If they're keeping, is the pay even worth it? And the unknown of your consistency drives me bananas versus, cool, I don't have to worry about if someone doesn't like me, I could get fired or get put on a bad shift. I don't have to worry about that. Yeah. Like, Eli puts up with me and he loves me. Great. Yeah. And then we go out, man, and like, and we work, but I don't have that. I don't have to worry about who's liking me and not liking me and playing the politics of shit to not get fired to keep my paychecks. That I don't like that anxiety. Mm-mm. And on top of it, even if everyone likes you, man, like, how do you know that the company you work for is not in shambles and it's consistent, right? Yep. So food for thought that if that consistent paycheck and being on that nipple, you feel like you can't breathe if you're off of it, like give that some thought. Dive into that. Because again, I was a company man for a long time. It wasn't the consistent paycheck that scared me. It was everything that comes with that, that kind of like handcuffed me to where now I benefit in betting on myself.
True. And reason we wanted to do this today, guys, like, you know, we're on the climb, you know, we haven't made it per se. We've made it in a lot of people's eyes, but you know, for us, like we haven't made it per se. We're on the climb. That's why we're documenting this. The last thing we wanted to do was, you know, build a multi-million-dollar company and then start documenting the shit doing and talking about the good old days. So I think it is important, man. It's going to be fun 10 years from now to come back and listen to this one and just hear about our old jobs and our struggles right now and having the team, but my account overdue $300.
You know, all of that stuff makes it work. Even just talking about what it's going to look like 10 years from now
yeah.
makes that everything that we're doing right now is super worth it because you can get excited about that. It's hard for me to get excited about something I can, like, not that I don't love police work, man. We've spoken about it. But what does not excite me is because, like, you can see what sergeants are doing, what lieutenants are doing, what you and I are doing. Who knows what we're going to be in 10 years? That excites the shit out of me. Influencing others, helping others get to where we've gotten now and where we're going. That excites me.
Yeah.
That super excites me.
Yep. Thanks for listening today, guys.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. We'll see you guys. We're going to do one the end of this week for sure.
Friday.
For sure.
Let's do it.
We'll be back. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Out. I'm sipping on down into